Right, this is Pat Rodwell. On the 13th of March 2025, talking to Anne, we're in Spain. Anne, could you introduce yourself?
My name is Anne and my dog is called Gromit.
And where are we?
We're in a town called Javier in Spain, which is halfway between Alicante and Valencia. And this is where I've lived for the last 7 years.
Yeah. And what year was your date of birth?
I was born in 1957.
Thank you. Right, let's start by you telling me a little bit about your family and where they're from.
My parents are both from Westport, County Mayo, in the west of Ireland. They were born in villages very close to each other, between Westport and Newport, in a region called Kilmina. And my father used to court my mother by rowing across a bay, because it was much quicker for him to row across the bay than to walk all the way around it.
Excellent. And when did they come to England?
My father came over first during the Second World War, and my mother came over just before the end of the war. And he came to work as a, he was a mechanic and came to work in Worcester, and because there were no, there were some cars in Ireland, but nobody had fuel, so the cars weren't going anywhere. So being a mechanic wasn't a very fulfilling job.
And where were you born?
I was born in Preston, and my dad had two sisters who lived in a town called St. Helens, also in Lancashire, and he used to go and visit them. And when he was visiting them one time, a man he met said that if he was going to bring up family anywhere in England, he would go to Preston because the people there were very friendly. So my dad had his CV, and he then walked around all the garages in Preston with the CV, his little resume from this garage in Worcester. And then he got a job as the working for the main Leyland dealership in Preston.
Did you have any? Oh, have you got any siblings?
There were four of us in the family, and my sister died in the year 2000. And I still have two brothers: one 6 years older than me, one 8 years older than me.
Mm-hmm. And do you and your siblings consider yourself to be Irish?
I considered myself to be Irish as well as English, given I was born in England, lived all of my life in, well, not all of my life in England, but I've never lived permanently in Ireland. One of my brothers associates himself very closely with Ireland. One of his daughters has gone back to live in the old family town in Ireland, Westport. And the other brother loves going to Ireland, but lives in Surrey and is definitely, I'd say, at least half English.
And do you visit Ireland very much?
I used to visit when my mother died when I was 9 years old, and I spent every summer holiday from when I was 9 till 17 in the west coast of Ireland in Westport on one of my uncle's farms. So I used to go every year, and then when I was growing up, the only family holidays we ever had were going back to Ireland. And normally I've visited probably every 2 to 3 years, although there have been longer gaps when I've lived outside of Europe.
Okay. And tell me about school in Preston.
I was educated by nuns from the time I was 4 till the age of 18. First of all, with a little primary school around the corner. So my total education was Catholic. At the age of 11, I went to a convent school in Preston called Convent of the Holy Child Jesus, or Winkley Square. There were two Catholic convent schools in Preston, and I went to Winkley Square because it was slightly further away from my house, so I got a free bus pass. And that was the reason I went to that school.
What are your memories, particularly of secondary school?
I really enjoyed my secondary school. Most of the nuns were very kind. We did have some lay teachers, and I made friends at that school when I was 11 that are still my friends today, and I am nearly 68. And I spoke to one of them last Sunday, sitting in this very chair for about an hour. So I'm very happy school childhood. It was very good.
Mm-hmm. So the nuns weren't stereotypical bad nuns?
No, I mean, it's quite strict, and we had our uniform with this horrible green and red pleated skirt. And every so often there'd be a skirt inspection, and you had to kneel on the floor. You had to kneel down and your skirt had to touch the floor. And if it did, because some of the girls rolled their skirts up the waistband about 3 times, which isn't a great look for a pleated skirt. But we had, if our skirts didn't fit, touch the floor, then a letter was written home that the skirt either had to be lengthened or we just had to stop rolling it around our waist.
And how did you get on at school academically?
Pretty well. I think I got, I can't remember, 8 or 9 O-levels, 3 A-levels, and went on to university. But at school, most of the careers advice was fairly poor. So they thought most of us were going to either not go into further education or go and teach. And they didn't really think about many other things that we would do.
And you went to a Catholic school. Was your home and upbringing a religious one?
Yes. Apart from 2 neighbours, most of the people I knew growing up until I went away to university were Catholic. We mixed a lot with relatives from Ireland. We had cousins from Westport who lived just around the corner. My parents were very, very religious. My father became more religious after my mother died, but it was definitely Mass on Sunday, confession on Saturday, benediction on Sunday afternoon, sometimes Mass during the week. Easter was just church all the time. So yes, a fairly conventional Catholic upbringing, given I had Irish Catholic parents.
And how did you feel about that at, say, age 15 or so?
I didn't know anything different, so I thought that was the way everyone lived and went, because everyone I met and everyone I knew was also Catholic. So apart from my neighbours, who were actually very nice people, but everyone else did the same thing. Every Sunday you went to Mass, you belonged to the Sisters of Magdalene, you did this, and everything was revolved around the church. Mm-hmm. And my mother didn't go out because she was ill for a long time, but later on, if my father ever had any social life, it was at the Catholic club. That was so. Everything revolved around something to do with the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Now, this project particularly concentrates on the year from being 15 up to being 25. Are there any particular memories that come to mind when we talk about being 15?
Not particularly about being 15, but when we were at school and we started doing our A-levels and we're in the sixth form, then there is this thing which I really cringe now when I look back at it, but there is a private Catholic school quite close to Preston called Stonyhurst. And once the boys were in the sixth form, Stonyhurst College used to pay for girls from the Catholic schools of Preston and Blackburn to be shipped up to Stonyhurst on a Saturday night for their dances. Me and my friends thought this was great because we didn't have to pay for anything. We went to Preston bus station. They had a minibus that picked us up, took us to Stonyhurst. There was a bar. We were allowed to have drinks. There were priests. These dances used to take place in a really long refectory. And there were priests at the end of each door to make sure that no boys disappeared with a girl anywhere outside of this refectory. But we just thought it was a great free evening. Then we'd have a minibus take us back to Preston. And because my dad's house was outside of the town, I'd always go and stay with 2 of the friends who were twins. And it's one of those friends that I'm still have, you know, probably monthly, 6 weekly conversations with now. But when I look back on that, the shipping in of Catholic girls to the Catholic boys' school, it just makes me cringe.
What sort of dancing was it? What sort of music was it?
Oh, it was, you know, it was Rolling Stones, it was Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. It was music that, you know, is still around today. But it wasn't until I went to university at the age of 18 that I actually met many people who weren't Catholic. And my first boyfriend at university was Jewish, which caused quite a family stir.
Oh. So you were, that was when you were 18?
That's when I was 18, yeah.
And how did the family know about him and meet him?
They knew about him because in those days you just wrote letters home as well. But I do remember when I went to university that at school we were very shocked that one girl became pregnant and missed her A-levels because she was pregnant. And that was because I didn't mix with anyone else who wasn't Catholic. Everyone thought that was a terrible thing, that somehow she'd had sex before marriage and was pregnant. So when I went away to university, I think I was probably still quite naive. And I met this very nice man called Giles, who looked after me in the sense that my father should have given me lots of money towards my grant, but he never did, and I never asked him. So I had £13 a week to live on in my first year, which included paying my rent, going out, buying books, and all my food, everything. So if I hadn't met Giles, then I'm sure I've actually survived my first year at university. He's a very nice, kind man, and I'm still in touch with him vaguely, and he has been, and Dave, my husband now, has met Giles on several occasions.
Well, that's nice that you're still in touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go back to teenage years in Preston. So the Stonyhurst dances were one part of your social life. What other things did you do with your friends or your family that you'd call?
It was mostly friends. So on Saturday nights, if we could afford it, I worked on a Saturday job at British Home Stores on the knicker department, and I got paid £1.87 a day, and my bus fare was 50 pence. So I didn't make a lot of money. But we were going to Preston, and we would do a little pub crawl going around the same four pubs, and we would have a half of a beer in one pub. One pub, for some reason, we just always walked in one door, walked along the length of the pub and walked out the other door. For no reason that any of us can ever remember, that was part of our routine. And I remember for my 18th birthday, I spent it sitting, doing the same pub crawl, and then going to Avenham Park with a bottle of wine and missing the last bus home and walking back to my friend's house because I couldn't get home anymore. And my dad was in Ireland. He was at his eldest brother's funeral, so he wasn't there for my 18th. But that's how I spent my 18th birthday.
So did you get into trouble because of that?
I did have a wicked stepmother, so I got into trouble with her, but I didn't really count that.
Right. Oh, and how about your brothers? Are they older than you or
One of my brothers, John, is 8 years older, and he went away to be a priest when he was 11, so I was only 3 years old. So I didn't grow up with him, but the other brother, Brian, was very supportive and very protective, and would act as my, if I did need to go out into Preston and I couldn't get to somewhere, he would act as my taxi driver. And if I had talked about a boy, I had to pretend to just casually be in a pub at a certain time. Brian would come in and look them up and down and check that they were okay and then go out again. So I had a very protective brother who watched over me.
That's lovely. Were you allowed to go out as a teenager when you wanted, or was there a strict sort of rule at home about
going I didn't have any money to go out until I was 16, until I started my Saturday job, so it wouldn't really have occurred to me to go out before then. I mean, lived quite some distance out of town, so I needed money for the bus fare as well. I couldn't just walk into town. But I think once I had my Saturday job, so then I could go out into Preston.
Excellent. And how about boyfriends at that early stage, before you left home? Were there any boyfriends from Stonyhurst or elsewhere?
Yeah, there was one boy from Preston Catholic College, which is the boys' school in Preston. And the building happened to be straight across the road from my school. So I did have a boyfriend there briefly when I was about 16. And I had a boyfriend from Stonyhurst, who I remember was called Chris, and was a Man United supporter. And Brian, my brother, just decided, therefore, he must be a hooligan. Because he was a Man U supporter. Yeah. But nothing serious, and I was still quite innocent when I went away to university.
So, academically, you did well. Was it assumed that you go to university, or by your family, or did you want to go and push for it? How did it come about?
I wanted to go because for my A-levels I studied English and history, and part of my history course was American Studies, American history. Mm-hmm. And it was at the time of Watergate, and I just got really fascinated by American politics. And because it was Watergate, we used to talk a lot about American politics and what was going on. And when I was looking at prospectuses for universities, I opened the book, and the first course that was there was American Studies, because it was the beginning of the alphabet. And I didn't know that you could do a degree in anything to do with American Studies. So I found this course at Warwick University also included Latin America, so it included Cuba and the Cuban Revolution and Peronism in Argentina, and I just thought, wow, how can this course, how can anyone say that this is a serious course, and, you know, people will give me a grant to go there. Mm-hmm. But once I'd found out about this course, I was really fascinated by it, and my dad was just really pleased, because my brother John, Brian, left school at 15, I think, mm-hmm. with an O-level in woodwork and nothing else. John had a very good education when he was being educated to be a priest, but he left when he was 16, 17, and then came back to Preston to do his A-levels. But he was, imagine, he'd had a very secluded life in the seminary, and when he came back, there were all these distractions like television and girls, so he didn't do very well in his A-levels. But he went to Cambridge Business School, Cambridge College of Arts and Technology, I think it was. So he did go away for further education. I was the first one that went to the university, and my dad was just very proud and very supportive.
Yeah. What was it like having a brother who was off training as a priest?
Again, because it happened to so many families that one member of the family, the boys, would go off to be a priest, and I had other cousins who were priests, I had cousins who were nuns.
Right.
It's only later, when you look back and think, God, that was terribly young, 11, but apparently that was he decided that's what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I can remember the letter, when he wrote a letter saying he wanted to leave the seminary. I remember that letter coming and everyone being really upset, and the idea that it brought shame upon the family that the son who'd been was going off to be the priest was not and was going to come back. I remember that.
Mm. It must have been quite traumatic when it came back. How did it affect the family?
There were lots of hushed conversations. I think I was still too young to really know what was going on, but there were lots of hushed conversations about it. And it was just around the time that my mother died. So it was all, I think in my mind, it's probably all mixed up with my mother dying, my brother coming home. Mm-hmm. And my eldest sister left home as my mother was dying from cancer. But she was always considered the black sheep of the family because she had always rowed with my father. I was quite compliant. And my eldest sister was rebellious and very stubborn and just like my dad. So the two of them just clashed a lot. So she left home when I was 9. She was 10 years older than me. So I never really lived with her, and I didn't live with my brother John because he left to be a priest, apart from 2 years when he was back at home doing his A-levels.
So that whole thing must have been a difficult time for your family and difficult for you at that age.
Yeah, I mean, especially after my mother died, my father was distraught and went to church every single night, and would go to church and cry in the church mm-hmm. every night. Mm-hmm. And he used to say that if it hadn't been for me, he probably wouldn't have still been alive, because he obviously had to keep going because I was only 9, I couldn't look after myself. Mm-hmm. But then he met a lady when I was 15, he met a woman called Mary, and they eventually married. So he had someone who was a companion and looked after him. Although she wasn't the nicest person in the world, she was very good to my father.
Right.
So, and I probably wouldn't have gone away to university if Mary hadn't been there, because I don't think I'd have gone away and left him. And we remained very close until he died. So,
how do you think that affected you as a 15-year-old?
I learned to be quiet and not express my opinions or emotions. Because if I argued with Mary, I was putting my dad between someone who is now his wife and his daughter. So there's very few occasions, but I remember standing up to Mary. And one of them was when I put a jar of something on the table without putting a saucer underneath it. And she told me that if my mother had brought me it properly, I wouldn't have done that. At which point I let rip. I went for a very long walk. But basically it just meant I just learned to bottle emotions and not say anything, because otherwise it was too difficult and there would have been rows all the time.
Mm-hmm. That must have been hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to 18 and going off to university. Tell me what that was like when you first arrived and found yourself away from home.
Yeah, Warwick is a campus university, and I'd say 99% of first year students are on campus. I was not, because one of the times when my housing form came through to fill in about where I wanted to live and who I would share with, my brother John, the one who'd gone away to be a priest, filled in my form for me because I wasn't there. And he declared that I refused to share a room with anyone who read any Rupert Murdoch publications. I would not do this, I would not do that. But the end result was that I was the only student that anyone ever knew who wasn't on campus for the first year at Warwick. Now, my brother still denies ever doing this, but that was the case.
What was his motivation?
Well, he just didn't think I should be sharing with people who read The Sun or the News of the World or whatever. So
where did you live?
So my first two terms at Warwick, no, probably my first year, I was in a little bungalow about a mile and maybe 2 miles down the road from Warwick, not in the town, in the middle of a very quiet area, with a landlady who didn't want her to be in the house between 9 and 6. So I think after about a month, my brother Brian came down with his wife and they brought a bicycle for me so I could get in and out of into the campus very more easily. And that's why I think if I hadn't met Giles, my boyfriend, I would probably have despaired and gone home because it was fairly miserable being away from home. I wasn't with all the other first year students. I was on my own, but I wasn't allowed to be there during the day. But I did meet a friend called Janet who was doing my course. Mm-hmm. And we're still very good friends. So I would hang around in her room because she was on campus as everyone else was. And Giles was in his second year. And he had his own flat in Leamington Spa. Mm-hmm. Because he came from a very wealthy family. So he had his own flat and he had a sports car. So he was very flash and I was very impressed by all this. But he's also a very genuinely nice, generous man.
Well, he must be if you're still in touch with him.
Yeah.
So that was quite a change then,
yes,
for you.
Yeah, I think I became quite resilient. Yeah, but I'd meet people and they say, what do you mean you're not on campus? All first year students are on campus. I'm not. So.
Oh, dear. And in the second year, what happened in the second year?
The second year I was on campus and I was in a flat. I got in the same block of flats with my friend Janet, who we're still good friends with. So the second and the... But then in my third year, at the end of the second year, I won a scholarship to go to an American university. So I got a scholarship to go to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. So I kind of left behind all the friends that I'd had from my first 2 years at school. And that was quite funny as well, because when I went to Washington, there was an air traffic controller strike. So I was about 2 days late in getting to Washington, D.C. And the university had given away my accommodation, so I didn't have anywhere to stay. So on the... I can't remember, it was a train down from New York to Washington. I met some other people who were also students coming over from the UK to go to Georgetown. And one of them knew someone there because she was his girlfriend and she'd been an exchange student at Sussex the previous year. So he had somewhere to stay. So there's a couple of us who are homeless who went to stay, just slept on the floor in this house. And every day I'd go to the place where I was meant to be staying and saying, do you have a room? Do you have a room? And he always went with the same man, and I can't remember his name now, but after about 2 weeks they said, okay, we've got a room for you. And we both looked and he said a room, and they said, yes, we've got a room for, and they assumed we were a married couple. So we had this one room to share, and this man was very nice, but we weren't going out with each other. So we were very polite, and one of us would go into the bathroom and get changed and come out, and we had these two beds in the room. And then people would meet us and say, oh, you found somewhere to stay? And we say, yes, but we've got this room. They say, oh, so you knew each other? You were going out when you were in England? We say, no, we just met. And then after about another week or 2 weeks of doing this, I went down to the desk, and Georgetown is a Jesuit-run, very Catholic university.
Yes.
And this halls of accommodation was outside of the town. And I said, I'd really like to have a room of my own, preferably sharing with a woman rather than a man. And at which point they were going, what do you mean sharing with a man? I said, well, you give me this room to share with someone. And he's a very nice man, but I don't really know him that well. And it's probably not the best situation. So then they found me a room. Well, then I found a room where I shared with some other students. I met some students at a gathering of international students, and there were some American students there. And one night I didn't have anything to do, so I was sitting in the foyer. It was like a big old apartment building hotel. Mm. And I was sitting in the foyer, and they were going off to a supermarket. And they said, And I said, oh, are you going out? They said, no, we're only going to a supermarket. And I said, well, can I come? And they said, well, you've got nothing better to do on a Saturday night than go to a supermarket. And I said, no. So they took pity on me, and I went to the supermarket. And then one of the people that was in one of the women in their apartment, I think it was four bedrooms, left to go, and that she went to move out somewhere else. So they asked me if I wanted to move in with them. They were the Georgetown students. So I did, and one of them is called Elise, and I'm still in touch with her.
Oh, so that sounds quite challenging for a young woman who hadn't been away from home that long.
It was, as I said, I think I learned to become resilient after my first year at Warwick.
Did you, when you met others, did you introduce yourself as Irish, or did you just introduce yourself as from England, or did you introduce yourself as Catholic? How did you present yourself, so to speak?
I think probably not everyone, but a lot of people at Georgetown are Catholic, because it's a very Catholic university.
Mm.
And I think I still do it now. If someone introduces me, if I introduce myself, I'd probably say, you know, where you're from, I say England, of Irish parentage. So I always do the same thing at the same time. So
yeah.
I don't think I know anyone here in Javier who wouldn't know that I didn't, that I have, didn't have Irish parents. They just know that England and Ireland, and it's, you know, I'm half and half, you know, but all my blood, because I say all my blood is Irish blood. I don't have any English blood, but I was born in England and lived there for most of my life. So I think it's a combination of the two.
It is. And then you came back to England to finish off your degree after you'd had the year in America.
Yeah, so Giles, we weren't going out anymore.
Oh,
but we were still in touch, and he
came out. How did that finish?
Well, he came out to meet me in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we'd do some travelling together. So we did travel all the way down the West Coast. And one of my cousins, I spent the summer, I was there travelling round, and it was funny, I travelled round with a woman who was Irish and Jewish,
mm-hmm.
called Susie Solomon. And as soon as she introduced herself and people knew she was from Ireland, people always assumed it was Susie Sullivan,
yes.
And she was Irish and Catholic. And then she'd explained that, no, one of the first mayors of Dublin had been Jewish. But the two of us travelled around together for an entire summer, with very little money. I think we had less than $10 a day. And only one of us ever paid for accommodation. So we would sneak the other one into a room, and when the landlady, whoever it was, wasn't looking. And I still remember one place, we were up in Maine, and this room was so small, there wasn't room for me to put a sleeping bag on the floor. So Susie started moving the furniture around, and then the landlady came up and said, what's that? Can I hear someone moving furniture? And at which point I'd gone into the wardrobe, and then Susie opened the door to this woman and just, are you moving the furniture? And I still remember that Susie said, yes, I am. And the woman said, why are you doing that? And Susie stood up and said, well, you can't exercise properly otherwise. And now it's 1, 2, 3, why just started moving around. And we just had such fun adventures, because we had so little money, we were always improvising how we could stay somewhere really cheap, how we could eat somewhere cheaply. Anyway, so at the end of that summer, I'd been in Calgary, in Vancouver, in Canada, looking after one of my cousin's children. I did have 67 first cousins. And I was looking after the children of one of them. And they had an old estate car, and they said, they were looking to buy another one. They said, if we get the new one, you could have the old one and travel around with it. And so I was waiting desperate for them to sell this car. They didn't. To buy another one, and they didn't. So I got on the train that went from Calgary up to Vancouver, got to Vancouver, and I don't know how they got the message to me, because they certainly didn't have mobile phones, but I think they must have known where I was staying, and they managed to telephone saying that they had just bought another car, so I wanted to borrow their estate wagon. I had to go back to Calgary, which I did. I met Giles, and we hitchhiked back to Calgary.
Mm.
I got this old car, put a mattress in the back, and travelled all the way down the West Coast.
Yes.
And then you asked how it ended. Mm. In the middle of the desert, he proposed.
And how old were you then?
So I was 21. Mm-hmm. I was 21 years old, and he proposed, and I said, that's really nice, but no, thank you, I don't want to marry you. And we still had some of our travelling to do, so it was a bit awkward. But we still stay, genuinely still stay friends. So I went back to Warwick for my last year, but almost everyone I'd known for the first two had left, because mine was normally a three-year course, and I'd made it into a four. So I didn't know that many people, but I did know someone from my second year. And Charles stayed in touch with me, carried on as friends for a long time. I went to his wedding. He came out to visit me when I went to live in the Netherlands for 4 years, and Charles came out to see me there. And when he eventually got married, I went to his wedding.
So. That's lovely. As we're on the subject of boyfriends, would you like to say anything about your love life or sex life in those years?
When I went to university, I was still a virgin, as I think nearly all my school friends were. And then Charles was very patient, and he'd obviously had girlfriends before, but I didn't. I hadn't had a serious boyfriend. And so eventually, after about 4 months or 5 months, went on the pill. So it took a long time to persuade me that this, you know, I wasn't going to wait till I got married, but he was very, very gentle, very kind. So I went on the pill sometime in my second term. And then I remember one of the disastrous things happened is that when I went home to Preston, I had to hide my pills, of course, because, you know, not allowed. And Mary, my wicked stepmother, found them. And then she just stopped speaking to me. And she didn't just find them. I'd hidden them. They were under this and in the middle of that and wrapped around something else and put away somewhere very secure. And she stopped talking to me. And I remember talking to Brian and saying, I think Mary must have found my pills, you know, my very supportive brother. And he'd go, okay, right, we need to have a plan. So let's think of a plan. So then he said, right, you have to talk to her, and if she raises it, you have to talk to her and say that you're having really bad period pains, and it's very painful and it's stopping you be able to study because you couldn't concentrate, so the doctor prescribed these tablets for you, but that's what they were for, and don't mention anything else. So that's what we eventually, Mary and I had the conversation. I told her that, and I'm not sure she'd believe me or not, but Brian made me, had given me as a salesman, he gave me a very convincing argument to tell her.
That's good. And had she told your dad?
I don't think so. But that first summer, I remember Giles was going to France with his family. They always went to the same area. And he wanted me to go with them in the car. And I knew it wouldn't be allowed if there were just two of us. So again, Brian and I had this long conversation about what story would come around. So he said, well, it can't be just you and Giles. That's obvious, because that would never be allowed. And two couples, that doesn't sound good either. So you have to make up, there's a group of five of you. And there's three women and two men, and you're just going as part of a group. So that was the story that I came up with, and that's how I got to go on holiday with Charles for my first holiday in Europe.
And did you take him home to Preston? Did you meet your family there?
Yeah, he did, yes. He came up to Preston, and the first thing Mary did was feed him pork chops. This is true. I remember my dad saying, so tell me more about this man, Jack. And I said, he's called Giles. And he said, and what's his surname? And I said, Reuben. Reuben, they said, it's a very good Irish name. He said, he's not Jewish, is he? Well, yes, he is, actually. He wasn't strict or very orthodox, because he liked bacon sandwiches anyway, but Mary didn't know that when she gave him the pork chop.
So what do you think, was your father disappointed that you hadn't met a nice Irish?
Yes, he used to say, what's wrong with all the nice Irishmen and the Catholic men, but I never did. When I was still going back to Ireland, when I was probably 16, 17, then I did have Irish boyfriends, mainly put up with my cousin, Dermot, who used to line up his friends for me to go out with, whether I wanted to or not. So my cousin Anne's over from England, she'll go out with you.
Tell me about, did you say 63 first cousins?
67.
67. So where were they scattered?
All over the world. Lots in Ireland, lots in Canada, lots in Calgary, some in Maryland, some in Australia, some in New Zealand, not Australia, some in New Zealand, some in Hong Kong, lots in England, in around Wembley in London, lots of my mother's family, the Kellys, the O'Kellys were around Wembley. So, and lots in the north of England as well.
And how many are are you in contact with out of?
Oh, probably about half a dozen. Right. And lots of them were much older than me, so some of my oldest cousins were nearer my dad's age than I was. I was, from both my mother and my father, I was the younger, they were at the younger end of their family,
right.
And I was the youngest child, so between them and the eldest child of the eldest aunties and uncles, they mm-hmm. was, you know, mm-hmm. I think one of my cousins, my godfather, Bernard, is, I think, 94 at the moment, mm-hmm. so I was, but I was very close with the cousins that I used to go and stay with in Ireland, and I still talk to them and still in touch with them, mm-hmm. and one of them, Dermot, still keeps saying he's going to come out to Spain, but he hasn't made it yet, so we'll see.
So you feel part of a big family?
Yeah, for sure. Always yeah. part of a big family.
No, that's lovely. That's good. Let's
you might have met Dermot and Andre once when we've been in Westport. I can't remember.
Definitely. Yeah. I've definitely with a couple and their son.
Yeah.
I remember meeting. Yeah.
Yeah. So still. I think because both parents were from the same town, it's a very strong connection to one place.
Yes, yes.
And if they've been mother from one town, father from another, it might feel less of a connection, but all the families there, and Joyce is a very West of Ireland name.
Right.
One thing I didn't mention, oh no, we'll come on to marriage, but it's all right.
Yeah.
So
oh, no.
we can come on to that later.
Oh, can we? Yeah. Go now, tell me
no,
now.
No, just because people say, am I English or Irish? And yeah. I love having my Irish name. So when we got married, when I met Dave and got married in 1991, I didn't change my name because I always wanted to keep my Irish name.
Mm.
But in 1991, it's quite unusual for the woman not to change her name. Yeah.
What was your family's view of that?
My father thought it was very strange, but it was even stranger that for a period when Dave worked at Reuters, his boss was also called Dave, which is Dave's name. And so Dave changed his professional name at Reuters to David.
Right.
So Dave had a business card called David. Well, not only could my dad Paddy not understand that I hadn't taken Dave's name, but the fact that he had my name on his business cards was very confusing for him.
Not usual.
Not usual.
So let's go back to you coming back from the States and going back to Warwick, and then you had a couple of years there.
Had one year there.
One year to finish off your degree. Yeah. Yeah. And what happened after that?
Then when I graduated, I was working in a cake factory because I didn't have a job, and I wanted. I was thinking of trying to be a journalist, but there was a big newspaper strike on at the time, and my boyfriend at the time, Charlie, who was one of the people I had known for my second year at Warwick, was still there when I went back for my final year, and we'd been going out for maybe a year and a half, and. Charlie was going up for a careers fair in Aston, Birmingham.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, well, I could probably do some interview practice. And he knew he wanted to work in IT. And I hate maths. And I thought IT must be something to do with maths. And it was been my least favourite subject. But I thought, well, I'll go along for some interview practice. I was also quite interested in working in industrial relations.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the time of lots of strikes at Rover and Red Robbie and all that. And so I went to the British Leyland stand at this careers fair and said I'd like to talk to their industrial relations people, and they said they're really sorry but they have no vacancies whatsoever in any department apart from IT. They're systems people that always like talking to arts graduates. Mm. Would you like to talk to them? And I thought, oh God, I've got hours to spend around here and I need the practice, so I might as well. So I talked to these people and they seemed quite interested and I could never figure out why. And then after a few days or a week, I got a letter saying, would you like to come for this 2-day interview? And I'd heard that they took place in called Studley Castle in Warwickshire.
Right.
And it's a very nice little stately home. And I by this time I'd learnt someone else had been there. And they said, it's like going away for a weekend to a hotel, but you don't have to pay anything. So I thought, well, I'll go and do that. So I went for this 2-day, you know, it's team builds, team exercises, and we got interviewed by the head of Jaguar Cars, who asked you very difficult questions. He asked you mental arithmetic questions. So he'd say, like, you know, what's 492 multiplied by 347? And I would always take the first two numbers and come up with some approximation. And he tried that a few times, and he said, you're always going to do that, aren't you?
And I said, yeah, if you give me a calculator, I can work it out, but otherwise, no. And he said, okay. And then he asked me what I'd do if I had £50,000. And I said, I would buy an old barn and convert it. And I can always remember him saying, I didn't with your mathematical skills you'd be able to do that. And I said, no, but I'd find an excellent subcontractor. And then he just, it's horrible interview, and so you obviously think you're not going to get a job. And just as you'd finished this interview, oh yes, yeah, one of the other questions was, how many things can you do with the paperclip? Mm. And I was coming up with earrings and necklaces and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And then just when you finished the interview and you had your hand on the door ready to go out, thinking, thank God that's over, he said, oh, please could you just describe yourself in 3 words? So I said, I was tall, dark and Irish.
Yes.
And which my father always loved. And when I went back to meet the other people who'd been there for the court, they were saying, oh, professional, hardworking, serious. And oh God, I've blown it again with my tall, dark and Irish.
Yeah.
But I got offered a job at Jaguar Cars, and that's how I ended up working in IT and project management for the next 40 years almost. So amazing how it all starts.
I know. That's brilliant. And what did your dad think about when you got that job? What did he think?
My Paddy's exact words were, well, God bless you, my child, and God help them because they'll need it. I can still remember that so clearly. God bless you, my child, and God help them because they'll need it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because he knew I couldn't do maths. But yeah. Then I learned that IT and systems wasn't maths, it was more logic and problem solving.
And I
could organise, I could talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they wanted you.
A lot of it was communication. Could you talk to people? Could you find out what they needed? Could you try and explain that to someone else? Well, that I could do fine. So.
And use a calculator for the other bits.
Yeah, yes. Or ask someone else to do it, yeah.
Oh. So when you started work there, you must have been coming up to your mid-20s, were you?
20, just over 22. I think I started in November and I've been 22 in June.
Yeah.
And still living in Coventry, in Earlsdon. Very nice house. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still going out with Charlie.
Yes. Oh, what happened to Charlie?
I shared a house with four lovely women. I'd found the house and I had a lovely big bedroom, ensuite bathroom. Now, imagine that when you're 22, a bedroom and an ensuite bathroom. Yeah. But then I found that Charlie was also seeing one of the women I shared the house with. But by this time, British Leyland had put all their IT people in one building in Coventry. It was before Jaguar people worked at Jaguar and Rover people worked at Rover and Land Rover worked there. Then all the IT people were in one building. So when I went to work, I saw him, Charlie, and when I went home, I saw Susie. So so my answer to that was to be very dramatic. I didn't just leave Coventry. I left England. I went to work in the Netherlands for 4 years. So again, I just moved on for that.
Did you, when you were younger, did you ever imagine that you would have ended up travelling so much and living in different places?
No, never. My dad never wanted to go anywhere. No. I mean, he just talked about going home, going to Ireland. He did go over to the States because he had two sisters and brother-in-law all in Chicago and lots of other cousins. Mm-hmm. So he did go over to the States and that was obviously a big adventure. And he went to Lourdes.
Right.
But that was, he never had any desire to go anywhere, whereas his children have loved travelling around the world.
I wonder, why do you think that happened? Why do you think the children did like travelling, have liked travelling so much?
I don't know. I think my brother John, he especially, I think when he was graduated, started travelling around the world for years. I don't think he had a proper job until he was nearly 30. He just travelled and the States, in Canada, in South America, and then the Far East, and then all sorts. He just travelled everywhere. And so I think he still has a wanderlust and still loves travelling and still likes to, he thinks he's been to the most countries of anyone he knows, and he probably has. Certainly in our family, he's got the highest count. Yeah. So I think it just opened my eyes to the fact that that was something you could do. There's a world out there.
Mm. That's great.
I mean, I've got school friends who have lived all their life in Preston and never want to move anywhere else, which is also fine, but I just...
It's lovely that you've kept in contact with some of those school friends, and you still see them.
Yeah, well, two of them, one, Helen, that I'm close contact with, and Leah. Helen and Catherine are twins, both still live in Preston, and Leah lives up in Glasgow, and 3 years ago, Helen and Leah met up and came out here together for a week, which is good fun. Dave was very patient, three of us. So.
Oh, three old school friends, that's lovely. When you think back to that period of your life, between 15 and 25, how do you feel?
Well, I think now when I look back, I think I was very brave going off to live in the Netherlands because I drove myself there because I had a little mini car. And now when I think about it, I think, how did I get there? It was the time of the Falklands War. I remember I delayed trying to start my job. So I went over for an interview and I got offered a job with Aramco, which is the world's biggest oil company. And I think I should have started in about February or March. And I delayed it because Helen is getting married, the friend that's still in touch with. And I thought, well, I won't be able to afford to go over there and come back for a wedding. So I just did everything as slowly as I could, the medical exams, the references, anything. And so I made it till I got to her wedding, and then straight away I went over and got on the ferry from Hull to Rotterdam and then drove myself to The Hague. But I'm thinking, how did I do that without sat there? And I just, one of the things I can remember is that on all the traffic signs, there was a sign that said Voorhandekeer. And I thought, where is this place? I mean, I've heard of Amsterdam and I've heard of Rotterdam, but where is this town called Voorhandekeer that I've never heard of? And it's only later I learned it meant through traffic. So everywhere you went, there were signs for through traffic. But I didn't know. But eventually I was to find my way to The Hague and find my way to this hotel I was put over for 6 weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Until I found myself an apartment.
That's brilliant. What a good start. We've talked about your family, we've talked about education, talked about your work, we've talked about your social life and what you've done, and your love life. Is there anything that that hasn't come up that you'd like to add about that period of your life?
Okay. So I'd had went out with Charlie for a couple of years probably. Then when I was in the Netherlands, I met a Dutch man called Ad. I went out with for nearly 5 years. But it never, and I'd had a proposal from Giles when I was 21, but I'd never wanted to marry any of them.
Right.
And then I met this man called Dave. And within less than 6 months, maybe 4 months, we just decided that we'd like to get married. But there was a slight complication that when I first met Dave, I worked with him, we worked on the same team, and he was married. And he was in an unhappy marriage, and we'd actually met each other because I was his manager and he was obviously unhappy at work. And one night I said, what's the matter? Do you want to talk about it? And he said, okay. Because it was a very sociable time in the city and people were always going out and drinking after work. And I said, well, you're not your normal self. You're not very happy. Do you want to talk about it? And we went out and he said he'd been married to this lady called for 7 years, but he was really unhappy and thought he was going to leave her. And I said, well, okay, do you need, any time? What do you know? And then eventually he did leave, but I was still seeing Ad, and I was still going over to the Netherlands to see Ad. And then maybe a few months after that, I was one who was very quiet at work, and Dave said, you're not usual, Bouncy, so what's going on? And I said, oh. He said, do you want to go and talk about it? So we went out for a drink after work, and he said, I think I've come to the conclusion I need to split with Ad, because I had background to it was, apart from the fact Ed was a lovely man, he was a drinker and a gambler, but he was also gambling my money, but I didn't know it at the time. And when I'd left Aramco, they had given me some money to pay for shipment of my belongings back to the UK, but I thought there's no point doing that till I've got somewhere to put them. So I bought a little house that cost £58,000, bankrupted me, and then I tried to pay for a shipment for all my belongings to come over to my little house, and the check, it was the day when he had euro checks, and the check bounced, and it was because there wasn't enough money in my account, because I had moved into my apartment, and the idea was that I'd been in this apartment for 4 years, it was really nice, it had near the sea, and the idea was that I never saw the landlord, I hadn't seen him in the 4 years I was there, so if I'd moved in, landlord, as long as the money kept coming out of my account, the landlord wouldn't know the difference, and I'd got a lovely flat with very cheap rent. The trouble was that the money did keep coming out of my account, but Ad wasn't putting money in the other way to cover it. And anyway, so I thought, and then Ad said he wanted to come over and live with me in England. And I thought, do I really want to spend the rest of my life with this lovely man, but a drinker and a gambler who's using all my money and not working, because he got bored very quickly. So then I went back to the Netherlands and finished with Ad and came back. And then a while after that, Dave and I started going out together. And before very long, we decided we'd like to get married. And that's when all hell broke loose, because I knew Dave would be married. And so I went up to tell Dad and my wonderful stepmother Mary that I'd like to going to get engaged to this man called Dave, and but he had been married, and I thought, but I said, but it's okay because he's not Catholic, he's Protestant. So, and I thought that marriage didn't count then, because yes, it was a Protestant marriage, yeah, and only Catholic marriages count. But then I learnt that if it's two Protestants who get married, it does count, which was news to me, sadly. And then we had this very long, difficult process where Dave tried to apply for an annulment for his first marriage. And that process took 4 years. But if we hadn't gone through that and got married in a Catholic church, my father would not have considered me to be married. He would not have visited me. He would not have allowed me to go and stay with Dave in his house. My sister got married in a registry office, and he never recognised her husband as being her husband because they weren't married in a Catholic church. And because he was very close to my father, and because he brought me up basically since my mother was ill for the last year of his life, so my dad had brought me up since I was 7, 8. And I thought, I can't do this to him and have his second daughter not marry in the church. So Dave was very patient and waited 4 years until his annulment eventually came through and we got married in the Catholic Church.
Right. And because of your love for your dad?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. It's a lovely story.
It wasn't at the time, because we couldn't plan anything, because we never knew when we were going to get married. We couldn't, you know, we eventually did buy a house before we married, but we couldn't tell the family that, because of course we weren't allowed to have a house because we weren't married. So it was complicated, but yes. It took a while to get married. So.
It did. But it had a happy ending.
Well, we're still here. It has. I can say, I think so, yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's great. And I think,
and you were at the wedding.
I was at the wedding. I was. It was very good.
March the 31st, 1991.
And we're nearly there again, yes, now, aren't we? It's only a couple of weeks till the end of the month and the anniversary. But how many years will it be this month? I can't wait.
As I was saying in the beginning, we're not very good at maths. So 1991 and 34?
Yeah, 34. Cheers to that. Cheers to that. Well, I think that is a brilliant place to stop. I think that's a cracking story to end with. So thank you very much, Anne, for sitting down and talking with me. And we'll... Yeah, that's 53 minutes and 9 seconds. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Patricia.
I shall now stop the recording.